Let's continue. Good evening. I want to check if my list is correct. Octavia, Lindy and Julie Clovata. Candy, number 15. I hope you are ready, honorable members. You're welcome. Octavia, you're welcome. Yeah, just feel free and relax. Yeah, just give your interview to sell yourself. You are going to have 45 minutes with us. 3 minutes is for you to answer questions from members. Each member will ask you questions for 2 minutes. Don't dwell in the background and the history and whatever. Just go straight to your answer. You must try to be short as much as you can. Yeah. And then, yeah. I think I'm sorry, then. Oh, okay. Okay, let's go straight to business. My name is Nontlantla Ngubendaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. Mine is just to ask you, tell us about yourself. Who are you and where are you coming from, and why do you think you are a suitable candidate to be appointed as one of the commissioners for CGE?
Thank you. I come from Mpumalanga province. I'm a graduate from Steki Teflo and also a graduate from UNISA, where I specialize on the Center for Community Development, Human Rights and Healthy Lifestyle. I'm also a graduate from Regenesis School of Public Management, where I got a qualification in financial management, project management, human resource management, policy analysis, and research. I feel that I'm one of the possible candidates for the post of commissioner, because when I looked at the functions of the CGE, I realized that I fit well within, based on the gender experience that I have. Because when you check the function, it states that the overall function of the CGE is to promote a conducive environment for gender equity and gender equality, and also for the total attainment of gender equality. And also looking at the functions of CGE, it's similar to the work that I've done almost all my life, because part of the function talks about monitoring, research work, policy analysis, lobbying, conducting investigations, and so on. So with the information and knowledge that I have under gender transformation, gender and sustainable development, I feel good to see I'm one of the best candidates approaching the panel.
Thank you very much. Honorable Van der Merwe, Honorable Bamstori, Honorable Tseke, and Honorable Tembegwayo, myself, you're the last. Oh, okay. Honorable Standa, you're the last. Oh, Kaola. Okay. Honorable Van der Merwe, Honorable Bamstori, Honorable Tseke, Honorable Maisela, Honorable Standa, and Honorable Tebuayo and Makaola, you're the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening. Yeah. I'm Liesel Van der Merwe. Welcome to Parliament. I wanted to ask you, you've articulated why you think you should be, or you are, a suitable candidate to be a commissioner for the Commission for Gender Equality. If you were to be appointed to be a commissioner, what would your advice be in terms of the plight of sex workers in South Africa? If you can give me your views on that. And also, you would know that South Africa is grappling with a gender-based violence crisis. We're not making much headway. In fact, in many instances, we are losing the war against gender-based violence. If you were a commissioner, what advice would you be offering government in terms of the shortcomings in our fight against gender-based violence?
Yeah, gender-based violence is one of the challenges that we face as a country, and it's a global challenge. And it also becomes disturbing when you check the statistics to realize that South Africa as a country, we are on top as far as statistics are concerned. In dealing with the issue of gender-based violence, I think we need to develop a dedicated office that strictly deals with issues of gender-based violence, because for now they fall within, in other provinces, within special programs. In other provinces, it falls within the Department of State and Security. In other provinces, it falls within local government. We don't have a coordinated approach that says this is where actually they should be belonging. I think it's gender-based violence is so rife to an extent that it needs to be have its own directorate, both at provincial level, national level, and also at municipalities where it's happening. And also we have the Thuthuzela centers as a country, which are a one-stop area for gender-based violence. They are doing effective work, but we can be able to fight the issue of gender-based violence if we expand these Thuthuzela centers, maybe in one municipality, for an example, we have maybe close to 2 to 3 of them, because it's something that we are needing and it needs to be happening. Then on the issue of prostitution is one of the oldest professions that we sometimes shun away from it. And unfortunately, it is happening. Some have developed a career out of prostitution. In Mpumalanga, for example, what we did around the prostitution, there is a foundation that is called Dignity Foundation. With the Dignity Foundation, we are believing that we must firstly decriminalize the issue of prostitution, but also what we do under that foundation, we came up with an exit strategy that addresses the issue of prostitution. I think if as a country we can have an exit strategy and have an alternative for people that find themselves in this particular profession, that could assist, because basically people go on to prostitution because of poverty. And when you check poverty in the country, women are the face of poverty. Hence, when you check the statistics of prostitutes, you get more females that are prostitutes as compared to men. Decriminalizing it will assist. Having a comprehensive exit strategy and alternatives as a country, that would assist.
Thank you very much, Oksana. Who's next? Maxori.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good afternoon, Octavia, Lindy Way.
Good afternoon.
Yes. Actually, it's good evening. What is your understanding of national gender machinery? And what are current challenges facing international gender machinery at the moment? And I hear from your presentation that you have experience as a gender within the trade union movement, and there have been calls to government to recognize and the end.
Let me start by answering the question on the national gender machinery. The National Gender Dictionary is a product of the Gender and Women Empowerment National Framework. Having a National Gender Dictionary is a good strategy because when you look at its composition, it has an element, it's divided actually into four pillars. There's an element of government, there is an element of parliament in the case of provinces, the legislature. Then the third wing is civil society organization. The fourth wing that forms part of the National Gender Dictionary is the Chapter 9 institution. So it's broad, it covers all areas within the society. What causes challenges within the gender dictionary is because some of the elements that are part of the NGM, they should actually find their expression in a policy. But the fact that we don't have a policy, the NGM is a product of a framework that creates a challenge. Because when you check the issues of implementation of the decisions that comes from the National Gender Dictionary, it's the Chapter 9 sector that comply and the government sector that comply, basically public service. It becomes difficult to force the decisions of the National Gender Dictionary to the private sector because the framework is not as binding as a policy. On the issue of the unpaid work, what I understand about this is that we have women that are technically not working, but they're sort of occupying the position of being a housewife. But when you check the work that a woman does at home and the work that a woman does when working, at the end of the day, it translates to work and it should be regarded as part of the paid work. I think somewhere we need to intensify policies, labor policies that deal with domestic workers so that the good work that they do is recognized as a valid, productive work.
Honorable Sakit.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good evening, Ms. Kuba. My question is, in your own view, is the Commission for Gender Equality still relevant today? Taking into consideration that we now we've got a fully fledged Department of Women in the presidency. And are you supporting the view that we must amalgamate or we must merge the Commission for Gender Equality with other Chapter 9 institutions?
Thank you. Some other time I was interrogating the ad hoc committee on the issue of the Chapter 9 institution. The recommendations that are coming there, they are maybe for future, but not for the current situation that we are facing as a country. The Chapter 9 institutions, independent as they are, the Human Rights Commission on its own, the CGE on its own, the Public Protector on its own, and so on, I think we are at a stage where we should maintain them separate as they are. Because when you check, we still have a lot of human rights violations and cases around that era that hasn't yet been solved. And you come to the Commission for Gender Equality. We always talk about gender equity as a strategic route towards gender equality. Gender equality being our destination, where we want to find ourselves as a country. We are not yet there as a country. When you monitor the equity targets that we have as a country, both in the public sector and the private sector, we are not there. We haven't yet arrived at an envisaged position to say we have attained gender equality. So for now, it's correct for them to operate separately so that they achieve their mandate as stated in the Chapter 9 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa.
Honorable Maisola.
Thank you, Chair. What do you understand How do you understand the causes, the drivers of gender inequality, let alone the violence part of it? Those are the resultants of inequality and power relations. How do you proceed this thing, and what are the drivers of this inequality? That's the first question. And how do you see solving those problems? How do you get to level the playing field and make sure that there is no more inequality, and by eliminating the causes? And number two, you talk about something in the future. I heard something like that. We need this chapters or whatever, this commissions, but in the future they may fade away. Well, how do we get to that destination to fade them away? It's a process. And how do you expect that actually such thing will happen? Thank you.
And another thing that causes the inequalities that we have, I can sum it up into 3 points. One that is overarching is the issue of patriarchy. Patriarchy meaning the rule of the father. And patriarchy brings a lot of male dominance towards women. So that is an element also that causes a lot of inequalities. I think we need to work towards transforming our society away from patriarchal tendencies, more to equality tendencies. The other thing that causes inequalities that we are facing at the moment is also the hidden curriculum. The way we raise the boy child and the way we raise the girl child. We nurture our girl child at an early stage to be too submissive, to be too obedient in a way that is not correct. Whereas the way we raise the boy child, we instill a lot of confidence and a lot of authority. As a starting point of dealing with the inequalities that we are facing as a country, let us change our mindset and a paradigm shift to the way we raise the boy child and the girl child. When they come to this world, they come in a form of a tabula rasa type of a thing, empty. It's us, the parents, the way we raise them. We create these inequalities at an early stage, which manifests itself into patriarchy later in the future. The other thing also that causes inequalities is how we view and interpret some of cultural practices. There are people that deal with cultural things in a positive way, but there are other people, they go to an extent now of abusing culture to push certain agendas. I think what we need also to do as a country is to come up with sort of a roadshow, a drive, whereby we correct some of the negative things that we have created, which lead to this state that we are facing. One thing that I love about my beautiful country, South Africa, we have good policies, good legislation, but one thing that is a challenge is the implementation of those policies. The policies that we have, the frameworks that we have, the commitments that we have, they do address and answer the issue of inequalities, aiming towards creating an equitable state. But let us implement the policies. In an event whereby there is a government institution or there is an organization that does not implement the expected policies, let us use whatever that is available to address them. Let me just make a simple example for now. In the public sector, we always talk about 50-50 when it comes to the advancement of women into management positions. We always complain that women are either unemployed or underemployed and within lower positions, irrespective of the qualifications and the skills that they are having. You check within public sector, we have the Employment Equity Act of 1998, which is both public and private. Then within the public sector now, we have what we call the Gender Equality Strategic Framework, which looks into the work of all the HODs, both at national level and also at a provincial level, whether are they reaching the equity target. And it has something that you call the 8 Principles Plan of Action that guides DGs and HODs on their implementation of gender equality. Irrespective of the fact that we have a policy in place, we have a framework in place, but still we are not reaching the equity target. It boils back to the thing that says we've got good policies, but implementation is a challenge. When you come to the issues of gender-based violence, sexual exploitation, child abuse, and so on, we also have good policies. We had ECDO. We are a signatory to ECDO as South Africa, which is in Tephuda. Thank you.
Tephuda. Thank you, Octavia. Honorable Tembokoyo.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Octavia. You have explained under motivation why you believe you are the right person to serve as a commissioner in the Commission for Gender Equality, and made mention of the fact that you are an active member of National Gender Machinery located for Ministry for Women, where according to you is a strategic and decision-making organ for gender issues in the country, which obviously means you are quite informed of the CGE and can easily identify, according to me, the weaknesses of CGE. What are the weaknesses of the CGE, in your opinion? And how will you address those weaknesses? And how will you be able to use your interpersonal skills, if there are, of course, to make improvements in this section? Thank you.
Yeah, the weaknesses that I've seen within ECGE, the first one is within the financial resource. Because I've noticed with concern that the CGE reports directly to the National Assembly on their activities, but their budget is located within the Ministry for Women, yet they have a responsibility of monitoring also the ministry. I think a decision further needs to be taken whereby the budget, for an example, IBA moved to maybe the National Assembly or the Department of Finance and so on. And also with that budget that is existing, it's minimal in the sense that when you check the scope of the CGE, it's broad and it needs an extensive type of funding so that they can adhere and deliver according to their mandate. The other challenge within CGE that I've observed is one around human resource. The office needs to be beefed with more people to carry the job. I understand their job, they had a legal section, a research section, an education section, and an IT section. But within those difficult sections, there is minimal workforce for them to deliver the work. Maybe if you can also work upon the structure of the CGE, because the more the years move, the more gender challenges are escalating. So more human resource is needed in that area. The other weak point that I've realized within CGE is around interpersonal relationships and also the issue around ill fighting. What usually causes ill fighting within an organization? It can be a number of reasons. Sometimes what usually becomes overarching. You find people that should be operating as a team, they end up operating as a group. And when you operate as a group, it's a bit difficult to achieve what is expected. But when you operate as a team, you work as a collective with a commitment to the mandate of the organization. You plan together, strategic planning to do them together, and there's an overall commitment in delivering what is expected if you perform as a high performing team. Part of my skill that I've learned in one of the degrees that I've done was understanding the workforce, that in each and every working place, you will always have that employee that is a star that you are proud of. You'll always have that employee that is a troublemaker. You deal with those type of employees as a person. You will have that employee that will be called a workhorse. You'll also have that employee that is called a deadwood. That is a human resource management principle, and it's there in every working environment. So if you are a manager, as much as your focus will be managing the interpersonal relationships, but it becomes very important that at the same time, try and turn your group into a team, and from being a team into a high performing team. Because once you have a high performing team in an organization, service delivery flourishes. You have a workforce that doesn't have even a lot of health challenges because they are in a safe, healthy, and secure environment. Infighting in an organization or in CGE, it can also cause a lot of health challenges. Waking up, going to work, not being satisfied. So my take on the matter is change the team into a high-performing team, and everybody will deliver according to the mandate of the organization.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I was tempted to say when people are working in group or they become a faction, yeah, in an organization. Yeah, next, who's next? Honorable Stander, you were the last, ne?
I go.
Oh, Kawula, were you, was your hand up?
No.
Your hand was not up.
I think it's, yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Can you explain, look, I've read your CV and you've been through a hell of a lot. Divorced mom, two children, cancer, all your things that you've been through. I think I'd like to hear from you. You've served in this field for a long time. So can you explain to this committee a project that you initiated, led, saw through to the end, and that had a positive outcome that you were proud about? And also, what do you think the CGE's role is in terms of international relations? So, for example, we've got other countries where there's gender oppression. What do you think, does the CGE have a role to play internationally? Thank you.
Yes, CGE does have a serious role to play internationally, because whatever agreement that the country engages on automatically is binding to all organizations of that country. For an example, we have what we call the SADC Gender Protocol. South Africa is a signatory to the SADC Gender Protocol. That automatically becomes binding to the private sector, the public sector, and the Chapter 9 institutions. For an example, there are these UNCSW that are taking place annually every year. And South Africa is a signatory to the CSW thing. So whatever decisions also that are done there, they are automatically binding to CGE. And CGE becomes handy in that era, more especially when you look at their role as an organization. That, for an example, they are only accountable to the law and the constitution, they must act in an impartial manner, exercise fairness, rule or take decisions without any fear or favor or prejudice. that element that only CGE can bring to the table becomes relevant for that. On projects that I've initiated and that I've led, I can name a lot. I'll try and pick three. We all know what we had SAWI. It started nationally. We had the Progressive Women's Movement. It started nationally. But when it was brought down to the provinces, I was instrumental with both. And then with the Progressive Women's Movement, I was more instrumental in the sense that at one stage I was the secretariat for it, and building the intellectual property for PWMSA, which was definitely going to benefit the province. When I was with the Department of Education in Mpumalanga, I was the first transgender and transformation manager for Nkangala district. I started that office from scratch, putting the systems and structures in place, everything that makes an oil and organization. I did that from scratch. One gift that God the Almighty has given me is to have an appetite for reading. I have an appetite for reading, and I have an appetite for writing. That works in very handy for me. When I joined the office of the Premier in Mpumalanga in 2007, actually with the Department of Education, I also developed a transformation policy for the department, and I also developed a transformation plan for the department. Then later I was elevated to the office of the Premier, where I was the manager office on the status of women. When I took over that office, the emphasis of that office at that time, they were only focusing more on calendar events and meetings that were taking place. On me entering that office, I introduced the team that I was working with to say, no, we have a national policy framework and a number of legislation, some international, that should be guiding the work that we are doing as an office. So working with the assistant director that was working under me at that time, with our director, we collectively developed the provincial policy framework for women empowerment and gender equality for the Mpumalanga province. I further introduced the team that I was heading to say, we have 12 critical areas of Beijing.
Thank you very much, Octavia. Your time is up. You know, it's only that, you know, the way you are responding, you make a person to want to listen more and to know more. Information is power. As policymakers, we were talking about the police, so it's one of our key roles, a responsibility. So that's why we're like, hey, listening to you, all of us, even Honorable Stand, I see her doing this. Honorable Kaula?
Thanks, Klano. Ngibonga, Klano. Kodwa ngicishe ngasho into engafanele ukuthi ngiyajabula ukuze umuntu okhuluma kamnandi kanje. Noma ngasase ngusho nje. Why ngikushiso lokho na? Eqinisweni thina sifuna umuntu esazi ozokwazi ukulekelela abantu bakithi besifazane while behlupheka njalo la eSouth Africa bengakutholi ukuphumelela. Lana nkosazana yami emhlophe, abesifazane basiyinkingeni yokuthi ethi eyihambela nje emgwaqweni asukele umuntu wesilisa athi uyamthanda, ekugcineni amtholise umntwana. Lo mntwana masemtholile, ekugcineni siyamdamba, seyisitha, nengane siyisitha, akasayondla ingane, sebayelekela ingane yakhe. Ingane igcine siwumthwalo kagovernment, ibe umthwalo nokagogo wayo. And le nto la, uma ngabe lo muntu wesifazane esebonile ukuthi nosengikhathele ukubekezela, bese dothi ngimshiye egcineni la kusuka khona inkinga la uthola khona umuntu wesifazane seyashawa useze segcina uyabulawa uyadlwengula nangokocansi. Umbuzo wami ke uthi uzosiza kanjani siwugovernment if uthi uyangena kulo mnyama kwenzeka uyangena ukuthi kusilekelele kule nto yokuhlukunyezwa kwabantu besifazane kangaka ngenxa yokuthi babukeleka phansi. Siyababona bayadlwengula. Enye into mhlawumbe ubonile lana kwimoja la umuntu wesifazane bekhala khona ngomuntu wesilisa abahlala endlini eyi-one naye nabatwana alala naye by force la azakhale khona ukuthi yena akakwazi ukuphumula empilweni yakhe njalo unyaka nonyaka uba nengane and uyamlala maze angafuni nokuthi aphume akhulume nabanye abantu ney'ngane zekhaya. Uzosiza kanjani ukulandela ukuthi la bantu bakuboshwe benziwe sure ukuthi ba-akhawunta ukuthi bakwazi ukuthi umthumezele ingane ayondle kungabi umthwalo kagovernment ngoba le mali le khisho ugovernment ayikho incane. Uzosiza kanjani Nkosazana Mhlophe uma usize lapho uzokuqedile?
Thank you very much. I-issue maintenance.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I won't be wrong.
I thought Kamala Octave really, so honorable members were going to hear when she responds. Yeah, in English.
Thank you. Earlier I said we've got good policies as a country. The other thing that we need to do, I think we need to go on a roadshow where we educate our communities about their rights and about the services that are available for them. Because look, as a country we have the Maintenance Act. And I say the Maintenance Act. People don't want to support their children. That act does have the capacity to force them. And furthermore, if a person is stubborn in paying maintenance, they even go to an extent of garnishing them. But we have so many people in our communities that don't actually have enough of this information so that they can act on it. Hence, I was talking of a drive. And then you also have AMA family courts in our system that should be addressing and assisting, for an example, a woman who is in a situation that you are talking about. As a country also, we have the Sexual Offences Act that covers and protects women who find themselves being raped, violated, and so on. So it goes back to us exposing our communities to what is available for them, something that will be assisting them in moving out of the negative situation they find themselves in. The other opinion that I have as a person, sometimes I get disappointed with due respect and off record with our judiciary, the way some of the rulings are being made. For an example, you find a person that has violated a woman, wealthy, money, then they would say it's a 2,000 rand bail or it's a 1,500 bail. Those tendencies, they defeat the good deed that is supposed to be done by our policies. We need tougher sentences for perpetrators that are responsible for rape, gender discrimination, femicide, to name a few. Thank you.
So you're agreeing with me that bail must be given to a perpetrator only if it's the interest of the people?
Yeah, partially I can agree with you. You know what is disturbing about bail at times? There was a case that I was supporting in one town at Gertsibande. The person raped a six-year-old child, then he was released only to rape again. So hence I say tougher sentences and more impossible sentences. And the sad part about that case, the perpetrator got free. Because imagine a 35-year-old giving a testimony over a child that is now 8 years old in 2019. They just said lack of the evidence and so on. I'm anti-bail in these violent crimes. People continue to violate women and to violate children because they know that I will get away with it. I will bail out and do it again. Tougher sentences, tougher sentences. We will see an improvement.
Okay, thank you very much, Octavia. Will make a recommendation that people must get it only if it's in the interest of our people. Yeah, learning from what you have told us now. Thank you very much. I think you were Makaula was the last honorable member. Yeah, and was satisfied. We wish you good luck. Is there anything that you want to ask, honorable member?
Just one short comment. The first one, let me thank that I've been given an opportunity to reach this level of the interview. And I wasn't sure that I was going to be given an opportunity because I was here in 2016. But I appreciate the fact that I've been given this opportunity. And the last sentence, naturally, let me plead for my province, Mpumalanga province. Without Mpumalanga, there's no fun. You all know that. Therefore, if you want to see transformation on these inequalities that we continue to see, service delivery in the areas where we felt there's no service delivery, give Mpumalanga an opportunity in the positions of the commissioners, because it's 25 years after democracy. We've never had a commissioner that came from Mpumalanga, and that is alarming. Give Mpumalanga an opportunity, you'll feel blessed for the next 20 years. Thank you.
Octavia, yeah, thank you very much for coming, and we wish you good luck. I'm hoping that our secretary has booked the accommodation for you. So you're not going to sleep in the field or in the street here in Cape Town. At least, people in Cape Town, they'll take care of you. Thank you very much. We are invited for supper. Our staff member will show you where are you going to eat. Thank you very much. We have learned a lot. Who's the next candidate?